You need to know about something big happening with China's currency.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with a global perspective on business and economics. In a world of financial uncertainty, one pretty certain bet in recent years is that the Chinese currency tended to go up, up, and then up against the U.S. dollar. But in recent days, international businesses and currency traders have been surprised to see things go the other way. In fact, the yuan is down again this morning to 6.13 U.S. dollars. To help us get a grip on this, I want to turn to the BBC's John Sudworth in Shanghai. John, good morning.
Good morning, David.
The Chinese central bank seems to be engineering something here, changing its currency. Tell me how it works.
For years, we've seen the Chinese renminbi strengthening against the U.S. dollar. Not as fast, of course, as Washington would like. U.S. policymakers still think that the dollar buys far too many renminbi. It makes Chinese goods much cheaper than they think they ought to be and, of course, widens the trade deficit. But this week, we've seen this sudden weakening, a reverse. And one reason for that, some people suggest, is that the Chinese government may be trying to give the speculators who've seen the direction of travel as a one-way bet over the last few years, certainty that the UN is strengthening. They want to wrap them over the knuckles and remind them that it can occasionally go the other way.
But John, it's also seen possibly as a move toward a more floating yuan, which would be another step toward the Chinese currency maybe someday rivaling the dollar as one of the great currencies of exchange around the world.
In the long term, perhaps, there is a hope that this is a move designed to allow them to weaken some of that control. And the theory is that the moment the Chinese authorities allow the UN to fluctuate by a 1% band daily against the dollar, they may be preparing, some people believe, to widen that band. This is perhaps them testing the waters ahead of that wider reform.
The BBC's John Sudworth in Shanghai. John, thank you.
It's a pleasure, David.
Arizona is open for business. That tweet came from the Arizona Chamber of Commerce after the state's governor vetoed a bill that would have given business owners legal protection to deny serving customers, including gay and lesbian customers, on religious grounds. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein is here live to talk with us about business groups lobbying hard against this measure. Dan?
Hey, David, that's right. You know, as you mentioned, look, the state's Chamber of Commerce, but some of the nation's largest companies, too, were against this. Apple, Intel, American Airlines. The NFL, which is set to host the Super Bowl in Arizona next year, started exploring new locations. Here's the thing. Critics saw this measure as a way to basically legalize discrimination on religious grounds, in particular against gays and lesbians. Supporters, of course, say discrimination had nothing to do with this. They point to lawsuits in other states where florists, photographers, and caterers have been sued for turning away some same-sex couples. Their argument is basically, we don't want to serve someone, we don't have to, and our beliefs should be legally protected. Arizona Governor Jan Brewer disagreed, saying there's no threat in the state of this. A spokesperson from Focus on the Family said Brewer was intimidated by economic retaliation. And when you look at business reaction to this, economics was a real consideration. They said, the Arizona Chamber said, look, Arizona is a welcoming place, and this bill sends the wrong message.
Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein, thank you. Now let's check the numbers. The FT 100 in London is down 0.8%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all down. This just in, one of our reporters has found a video store alive and well in 2014. Family Video is actually a chain of 779 video stores in the middle of the country. Real stores where you walk in, look for movies, and stand in line. No way, you say? Way. Marketplace's Dan Weissman reports.
First, you're not imagining things. Video stores have been going away. They're about an eighth as many as 10 years ago. Now, Family Video is the biggest player standing. So what happened to all the other chains? Here's Keith Hoogland, Family Video's president.
So they're just poorly run businesses in hindsight, you know, and we aren't.
The mega chains grew fast and borrowed a ton. To pay it back, they had to grow, and that got harder with new competition from Netflix and Redbox. Here's how Hoogland says he competes with those players.
Most of our movies we get 30 days before Redbox and Netflix, so this is still a new release business, and people don't really understand that.
Hoogland stores also keep prices down and pride themselves on customer service.
Oh, we're the Millers. That's hilarious.
Tuesday night, a store in Chicago suburbs. Mary Bart's here with her daughter Kimberly, picking out movies for Girls' Night In. Mary says they come here all the time.
We get our choices here.
And they both just like the place.
It's the people.
You know, it's right. It's, you know, like the mom and pop you can walk into.
Marty Graham is with Rentrak, a company that follows the home video industry. And he says Family Video has a secret weapon.
Family Video, first and foremost, is a real estate development company.
It owns the stores and the strip malls they're in.
In retail, they always say it's location, location, location. Well, Family Video is pretty good at picking out retail locations, and they have obviously a very supportive landlord themselves.
Keith Hoogland knows the video store business won't last forever, and he's not worried.
We're going to slowly shrink, right? And our business at some point will level off, and then it'll start stair-stepping back down.
As that happens, he can make his stores smaller and rent out the space to other businesses, including his own. Family Video recently became the largest franchisee of a pizza chain called Marco's, more than 50 stores and growing fast.
We're putting them next to the video stores because it's the pizza in a movie concept.
Michael Arrington tracks home video for IHS. Pizza in a movie?
I mean, how awesome is that? That is the kind of thing that you don't get from Netflix and Redbox. And pizza is not going to get replaced by any technology, I guarantee you.
In Chicago, I'm Dan Weissman for Marketplace.
And speaking of movies, there was the recent story that actor Jonah Hill was happy to accept only $60,000 for his role in Wolf of Wall Street. Decent cash for many of us, but close to Screen Actors Guild minimum, if true. But he got to work with Martin Scorsese. With the Oscars on the way Sunday, there's news that Sandra Bullock did not accept SAG minimum for the nominated film Gravity. The Hollywood Reporter says that with $20 million upfront and 15% of box office, Bullock will get paid at least $70 million. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.